Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Daily Objective. I want to say it's day 182 of the war in Israel, but I'm almost certainly getting that wrong. James, do you know the date off the
I
top of
think you
your
might be
head?
right.
Okay, there we go. I know my stuff better than
If
I
not,
think.
we're quite close.
Certainly. So today we're going to be discussing Joe Biden, a painful task, I know, but sometimes it has to be done. And we're going to be just looking at Biden's attitude. We have a little clip to play as well. But James, obviously you're in the US far more than I am. Just give me an impression, I mean, of Biden's attitude and for the listeners as well, but then also the American public's feeling about
And
it.
that's the whole issue here. In the days immediately following October 7th, the Biden administration sounded like they were giving full-throated support to Israel. It pleased most people in Israel the way he was taking it. I myself was already suspicious. And in fact, after some of our TDOs in October, people would say, "Oh, you're being too harsh on Mr. Biden. He's giving such good support to Israel back in October." I was already hearing cracks in the dam. I'm not sure he was ever really fully committed in a moral way to Israel. After all, he'd been appeasing Iran. He'd been allowing Iran to get billions and billions in oil revenue. He'd been doing his own hostage deals with Iran. He'd been desperate to reignite the negotiations over Iran's nuclear program. And in order to do that, I mean, there was that appeasement. And of course, the American media will never hold Biden or Obama responsible for their appeasement of Iran and their role in causing October 7th. And so you'll get articles in the Wall Street Journal, such as the one this morning, behind the mistakes of Israel's military. We still have hostages being tortured and raped. And of course, Hamas doesn't get the criticism. But Israel, for an accident, they took responsibility for. It was a misidentification. We didn't mean to hit the aid truck. We take full responsibility. That's what gets the grief. Unfortunately, this is working with the American people. What was 80 some percent similar to, it's still over 50%. Now, I grant you that the ones that have peeled off are the weak sisters, if you will, the ones that were likely to peel off at some point, and the harder core supporters of Israel, evangelical Christians, people who think like us, who may be more secular, the Jewish population, the pro Israel side, I think still is more intense. And I think if it came to it, there are more people who would defend Israel than would defend, in effect, the position of Hamas. But that leaves, and Joe Biden, of course, as everyone knows, just as the United Kingdom faces important elections at the end of the year, so does the United States. And to win, Joe Biden really has to win Michigan. Should Donald Trump win the state of Michigan, he's likely to win the Electoral College. And Michigan has a large concentration of Muslim voters. And it's not just Muslim voters, it's young college-age students who are also a key part of the Democrat constituency. And so, for purely political reasons, from what I can see, Joe Biden, and truly for purely political reasons, has first gotten his congressional surrogates, like Senator Schumer, to go out and soften the ground for him, prepare the way. And now he's trying to have it both ways. He's trying to talk out of both sides of his mouth. There's unmistakably a threat, an or else here. If Israel doesn't change the way it's fighting the war, Admiral Kirby says, any number of spokespeople for the administration. If Israel doesn't change the way it fights the war, we will have to change our policy towards Israel. Now, they haven't said out loud, we will cut off military aid to Israel if they don't. But there's an unnamed, unspoken threat out there, and it's an or else out there. So this has got to please Hamas. This has got to please Hezbollah. This has got to please Iran. They're celebrating in the streets when they send their delegations to Cairo for more hostage negotiations tomorrow or whenever it's supposed to be. They've got to be holding all the cards there. What in effect Biden is saying with these veiled threats to Israel is, if you don't change your policy, we will change ours. And so what they're saying to Hamas is, just hold on, maybe a week, maybe 2 weeks, I'm not sure. But if you can just hold on for a few more days, monsters of Hamas, the United States itself will be throwing you a lifeline. we're insisting on this aid lifeline, aiding and abetting the enemy, as we've pointed out on this channel. There's no question that the demands for aid is to support a population that largely supports Hamas, which is madness, supporting the enemy population, in effect. Now, one of the key things there is the aid. I heard from a United States senator, Senator Coons, this morning. He actually said that he would condition further aid for this, for Israel and this war, at least, if Israel did go into Rafah. So Senator Coons is saying, unless Hamas survives, I would demand that we cut off aid to Israel. He's an important Democrat senator, and he has some influence. Now, another member of Congress, a Democrat member of the House of Representatives, Adam Smith, not the 18th century economist, but the congressman, the Democrat congressman from Washington, has said, no. But you know, what he said is Israel's been far, far too harsh in this war. From the outset, Israel has been far too harsh, and it hasn't worked in their interests, as if appeasing international interests, if you will, is success. Making others happy in this way is success, not the elimination of Hamas. Now, it is true that it has dragged on. We have said many times that this war should have been, I've said at least many times, this war should have been completely wrapped up in October. And frankly, I wish that Trump, who was better on the Israel question, it seems to me, I wish he would currently be more full-throated in his support of Israel. When twice asked if he completely supports Israel, 100% supports Israel, he has declined to answer at all. And when he has answered, he says Israel should wrap this up, I think is his exact phrase. In other words, even Donald Trump is now pressuring Israel to wrap this up. Well, does he mean to wrap it up in the way we would want to wrap it up? He hasn't articulated that. And so you've got both major party candidates for president now trying to have their cake and eat it too, talk out of both sides of their mouth like pragmatic politicians are wont to do. There is no doubt in my mind that Joe Biden is trying to also have his cake and eat it too. He doesn't want to alienate the majority of Americans who still support Israel. He certainly doesn't want to alienate Jewish voters. I guess he's got to figure that most of those evangelical voters are going to go for Trump. But nonetheless, he's trying to walk a tightrope like the slimy pragmatist that he is. And he has completely stabbed Israel in the back. He is demanding that Hamas be able to survive to fight another day. Apparently, he wants ongoing and forever October 7th. But of course, they never stayed it like that. But Hamas has got to survive because he can't attack Rafah. That's at least the message he's telegraphing to Netanyahu. And the unfortunate thing is that Netanyahu is saying things like, oh, yes, we'll have greater protections of these aid convoys. Don't worry, we'll allow more aid in. We'll let you finish that pier so that we can really ship the aid in to Gaza. And it's that kind of appeasement from Israel that sort of makes that pressure, sanctions that pressure. Instead of telling Biden to go screw himself, which is what Netanyahu should say, we're going to attack Rafah and we're going to eliminate Hamas. He is saying, no, you're right. We'll get more aid in. It's really despicable. It's really rather disgusting. As I say, Hamas is still holding hostages. They're still holding hostages, and Israel is getting the grief for an accident that they take full responsibility for and sack the people responsible for. It's totally unfair. It's ridiculous. We would never impose this kind of demand on any other country fighting a self-defensive war. And here's this little teeny country surrounded by enemies, and it's under all kinds of unprecedented pressure. Can you imagine if we'd said to Ukrainian President Zelensky, no, you can't be attacking in Russia. You can't be, you know, imagine setting rules on how he is to fight that war. It would be absurd and people would reject it. Or consider before America left Afghanistan rather shamefully in 2021, a drone strike hit children. There were several children and innocent civilians killed in a U.S. drone strike in Afghanistan. These things happen. They happen even when you do an altruistic war like we were doing in Afghanistan. But did Joe Biden get the grief that Israel is getting right now? He was responsible for that drone strike that killed those children. So The total double standard applied to Israel, which is absurd, and Israel accepts it because of altruism. It really is. The bottom line here is altruism. You've got to feed your enemy. You can't wipe them out. You've been far too harsh, when of course there've been far, they've unprecedented steps in how gingerly Israel has been doing this self-defensive war. Unprecedented in the history of warfare, as far as I can see.
Absolutely. Now, Irene, should we just play that clip we have quickly?
Yeah, give me a sec.
Sure. And then, well, just whilst Irene's prepping that, then there's a chicken and egg question in my. Oh, there we go. Chicken and egg can wait.
With regard to the earthquake, I spoke to the governor. He thinks everything's under control. He's not too concerned about it. The governor of New Jersey, so things are all right.
On Israel! 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 Military aid to Israel, Mr. President.
Pardon me?
Did you threaten to stop military aid to Israel?
I asked them to do what they're doing.
You need to follow the hostages.
I think that's enough.
Yeah, we can halt it there.
Are you abandoning Israel? Are you? Is that a serious question? He asks back to the reporter.
Yeah.
Even as he's betraying Israel and abandoning Israel, he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. What did you ask Israel to do? He was asked. And they're doing what I asked them to do. Boy, he doesn't really want to say anything too specifically. As I say, like the slimy pragmatist that he is, he's trying to have his cake and eat it too and speak out of both sides of his mouth simultaneously. He's trying to be vague, obviously. And in saying what he's saying, look, if Israel doesn't hit any more civilians or aid convoys and does allow the aid to come in, all will be well. If he doesn't go into Rafah, all will be well. And he's saying now, do I think Israel won't go into Rafah? I think Israel is still planning on going into Rafah, despite the indications from the Democrats and his administration don't go into Rafah. But Israel has said, we're going to step up the aid. We're going to. But think about these aid convoys. We know these aid. Why are we giving aid to the enemy? These aid convoys have to be armed. Because, of course, Palestinians violently attack aid convoys going in. Hamas will attack and get it, or crowds will attack and cause violence. And so aid workers have to go in. And Hamas, as we know, don't wear uniforms. They're dressed just like civilians. Why do armies wear uniforms in wars? To prevent civilian casualties, so that the enemy can distinguish the combatants from the non-combatants. Hamas does not want that distinction. This is all part of their policy, of course, in using hospitals and schools and so forth. They want civilian casualties. That's why they don't wear uniforms. But think of it: we have unarmed Hamas people, and or armed, ununiformed Hamas people and armed aid convoys. So what is Israel and the IDF supposed to do? They see some unidentified armed people coming in. Of course, Hamas never dresses like Hamas. Oh, could the truck or the van be mislabeled? I don't know. But Israel's got to take these extraordinary steps, ignore armed people coming in, supplying, mind you, aiding, providing material aid to your enemy, and we've got to respect that as Israel, and Israel has promised to do so. So in that sense, the president's right. Netanyahu's in effect promising to do what he's demanding, which is despicable and disgusting, will only prolong the war, will only prolong misery, and as far as I'm concerned, only guarantee for future October 7th.
I agree. And that clip, not to take a swipe below the belt, but Joe Biden looks increasingly frail by the day. And speaking to people who like Biden, some of whom I know, they kind of couch his responses typically as, oh, he's kind of wily. He likes to play around with the press. I'm not really convinced that is that a serious question thing? Was that at all?
And no.
No, me, yeah.
I mean, that idea that Joe Biden is somehow intellectually impressive is bizarre. He was never a good student. He cheated in law school. He's plagiarized whole speeches because he's not terribly eloquent. And he was never the sharpest tool in the shed in Congress, even though he was in the Senate for decades. He always got policy matters wrong, particularly foreign policy matters wrong. And now, after the brain surgery, there's been such a steep decline as he's entered his 80s that everyone can notice it. I know they pump him up with vitamin B or whatever to do the State of the Union address, but no. The idea that somehow Joe Biden is this wily fox, I'm sorry, but I laugh at the notion. He was never the sharpest tool in the shed, and now he's declining and ever more frail, and he's not going to get sharper as time goes on.
Yes. I remember on the plagiarism point, very briefly, I remember reading about that maybe people in the UK will remember that Neil Kinnock, the leader of the Labour Party in the 80s, made a very effective speech talking about kind of class and education and his wife, and Joe Biden literally took it with not even really minor editing and just delivered it.
Almost word for word verbatim, even though he doesn't have, nor does his wife have, the background of Neil Kinnock or Mr. Kinnock's wife. So it's absolutely astonishing the lies that he'll tell, the plagiarism he'll do, the cheating he'll do. And that's who the United States elected president, and that's who they might re-elect as president come November. So this, I shouldn't be laughing. It's not a funny matter at all. When you talk about Israel and the continuation of Hamas, demanding its survival, demanding Israel not go into Rafah to wipe out Hamas, even as Israel is facing new threats because of their attack against Iranian officials, now they're facing new threats from the north. It's a particularly bad time. Hamas must be cheering. Iran must be cheering. They must be so happy. They must be so encouraged because, in effect, the Democrats are sending them a lifeline, saying, all you've got to do, Hamas, is wait a week or two more, and don't worry, it will get Israel to back down, give you the aid, not go into Rafah, etc. They're holding all the cards right now, Hamas. They really are. And, you know, they'll never, ever hold Biden accountable for his appeasement of Iran, for his role in causing all this, his role in helping to cause all this. No, no, no. It's Israel that has to, as I say, the media is full of it. Israel's mistakes. They make a mistake that inevitably happens in every war. They take responsibility, they sack the people involved, we'll release our investigation report. Hamas is currently still holding innocent civilians, raping and torturing them. We have evidence to believe that the abuse is still ongoing. And who gets the pressure? Israel, not Hamas, not the bad guys. It is moral perversion, the kind of moral inversion that must come with altruism.
For sure. Well, and my chicken and egg question was about altruism. Because so the trend that Joe Biden has taken is interesting, because almost every Western leader for however long now in their support of Israel, he's taken the same kind of path. So when Israel's attacked, there's pretty good kind of strength behind it for the most part, some variance here and there, depending on the leader. And then we see this decline. Now, in thinking about why that is, I think altruism is definitely involved, but it also seems just to be a lack of courage in a way, because in order to support Israel, given the dominant morality is altruism, it's going to take some stones to really kind of step up and articulate a defense of them. And I mean, it requires a lot of courage from the Israeli side. And how do you see it, James? Is it altruism which is causing the lack of courage, or is it the lack of courage which is leading to the altruistic perspective?
Well, I think much of the lack of courage is simply a question of political pragmatism. He, given the nature of the American voter and such strong feelings on the different sides, there are very strong supporters of Israel in America, and there are very now loud, increasingly loud voices, all those protesters, his worry about getting Michigan, as I say, as he needs to get in the upcoming election. And so part of it is pragmatism, but it's pragmatic because, so ultimately I'll say altruism, because it's only pragmatic in that sense, because there's this soft middle of group of voters who will be taken in by the, oh yes, Israel can defend itself, but it really should protect the civilians. It really should, this soft middle voter who's kind of squishy, that soft support that is declining, as I say, in America, that is the creature, that's the child of altruism. That's the child of unclear moral thinking. And were it not for the altruistic way in which the West engages in wars in recent decades, I don't think you'd have that soft middle or those kind of expectations of Israel. And so that creates the political situation that allows this slimy pragmatism and his ability to talk out of both sides of his mouth simultaneously.
Yes. And the people who, I think some people, because of the, as you say, the debauched moral perspective in the culture, they might not get the title, in effect, that Biden switched sides. And it's not exactly now, really, that he switched sides. Right. But I think people need to understand that in a zero-sum game that Israel's in, you know, it wins or it loses, and even a stalemate is a loss for Israel. If you're posing as Israel's ally, which, excuse me, I've got a frog in my throat, which Biden is wanting to do on the one hand, as you say, is talking out of both sides of his mouth, but then at the same time is undermining them and ever increasingly, like, strongly undermining them, then really what you're doing is you're supporting their attacker, their destroyer, which is Hamas. And James, where do you see this ending up? Because, you know, it's a dreadful thing to contemplate, but is this iteration of the conflict, do you think, can it end up like all the other ones where it doesn't end up being finished? Or
yes.
Yeah,
yes, I don't see this. I think Israel may go into Rafah. It looks like Netanyahu still has that in mind, even despite all the democratic pressure from my country that he not do so. On the other hand, he will compromise on the points of aid. He'll compromise to the point that, and they've waited so long as it is, there are Hamas leaders abroad. Even if they succeed in Rafah, I don't see Hamas being completely wiped out. And given this long extended, and given the international response, given the way everyone discusses the issue, criticizes Israel, no, I think Hamas lives to fight another day, and that means more October 7th. I am not very hopeful about the long-term prospects here. We are, most disturbingly, Israel is alone, apparently, in taking on the real source of this, Iran. And there is where my country's failure is particularly egregious. It is in that respect that America really, I think Israel could take out Hamas and Hezbollah all by itself, no problem. But when it comes to Iran, which is currently trying to develop a nuclear weapon and quite close, as I understand, and engaged in this coordinated attack, mind you, on American bases in the Middle East, encouraging and supplying the Houthis, who are now disrupting trade in the Red Sea. It doesn't matter how broad the attack from Iran, because this is a coordinated, obviously, a coordinated attack from Iran. It doesn't matter. America's got its head in the sand when it comes to the Islamic Republic, so deeply in the sand when it comes to the Islamic Republic that we are refusing to identify causes, take on the actual cause here. And so I can only, how can I be sanguine under those circumstances, Morgan?
Well, I don't know that you can. I mean, my next question was, I was going to ask you, because following the news as closely as we do, I think there's a lot of reasons to feel in the dumps, shall we say. There's a lot of reasons for pessimism. Is there anything we can offer people to hope for the best?
We are here. We are articulating a rational policy. We are not demanding that the victims sacrifice. We are, I mean, we truly, I don't mean to say that only people who have our sort of perspective, because we're such a small voice in the world, but we're growing. So consider subscribing, become a regular paid subscriber to the Ayn Rand Center UK. We are the best voice on this in the world, which is a sad, truly a sad state of affairs. But on the other hand, I guess my biggest hope is that the Islamic world is so backward and savage. They have all kinds of religious confidence and zeal, suicidal zeal. They're willing to martyr themselves and their children for this cause, which is, I suppose, a great strength on their part. On the other hand, Israel is technologically superior. They've survived this long, Morgan, only because they have been the more advanced and civilized. And oftentimes they've had to go it alone. So let's remember that they can and have gone it alone before successfully. I suppose those are the only things I can, the hopes I can count on one hand, if, as it were.
No, fair enough. And look, I feel ever increasingly pessimistic, I have to say, not because I want to, just because the facts point in that way. And, you know, I was going to say, unfortunately, but we have to be loyal to those. Now we have a couple of super chats. We might just run over a few minutes, but I don't think we've got anything at 7th. So as long as we, you know, we don't keep you too long, James, we'll just get through these. So we have $1 from Bonnie. Thank you so much, Bonnie. Gail gives $2 and says, yes, Biden's treasonous even by staying in the UN. I think, unfortunately, to a lot of people, it isn't clear why staying in the UN is treasonous, but certainly that's the case we've made on the channel.
You're right, Gail. You're absolutely right. American, British, Israeli interests cannot be found working with the United Nations. They are behind. They have Russia. They have China. They've got the Saudi Arabia on the Women's Rights Council, Iran on the Human Rights Council. No, it is absolute treachery for civilized nations to participate in the United Nations. Yes, Gail, I agree.
Then we have $5 from Stephen Harper. Thank you, Stephen. And then $10 from Jim Brown. Thank you so much, Jim, who says, Biden's DOJ is attacking Apple. His switch from Israel to Palestinians is no surprise. Even with vitamins on board, he's still a dumb thug with a big stick.
I think all the B vitamin in the world can't improve his intelligence. And truly, the Apple antitrust case is every antitrust case is despicable. Apple is, of course, a heroic company, giving the world enormous value. And of course, he's going after Apple. But that's standard Democrat playbook. You go after the large, successful company just because it's a large, successful company, even if it is remarkably innovative and has given the world incredible products.
Yes. And he's a dumb thug with a walking stick, I think, increasingly, rather than just a big stick. But then knows too much, 15 shekels. Thank you so much. There's never been a Palestinian ethos. It's an ideology. The Palestinian cause equals genocidal, pan-Arab, Islamic imperialism in the land of Israel. I mean, I think that's true. I was listening last night to a talk at the ASMEA conference by an Israeli historian called Tauber, I can't remember his first name, who was, this was from a few years ago, he'd written a book about Deir Yassin. And particularly he's disputing the historical record about Deir Yassin, because he wants to argue that actually no massacre took place, it was a battle and so on. And Deir Yassin, for people who aren't aware, is one of the kind of founding myths of the Palestinian cause. Oh, well, he wants to argue that it's a myth. Well, founding events of the Palestinian cause, and he wants to argue that it's a myth. But which was very, it was a very interesting talk. I haven't read his book, but his book then goes on to allege that this is kind of a myth which is underlying a kind of a false ideology, if you want to put it that way.
Oh, fascinating. I'm sure that's a fascinating read. I wonder if we could have that put into the notes here, a link to it or something.
Yeah, I'll send it to Irene and we can link that. Then knows too much, as again, thank you, 30 shekels. Said, in the 1960s, the Palestinian people were invented in 1960 with Soviet propaganda backing. Before the 20th century, Palestinian meant Jew. Immanuel Kant called Jews Palestinians living among us. That's interesting. Right. I didn't know about Kant's writing on that. Certainly, I know the PLO got funding from the Soviet Union, if that's what you're referring to there.
Kant was a notorious racist. Just to add to our bill of particulars against Immanuel Kant, he was a terrible racist, and he would say things of that sort, ethnically distinguishing, racially distinguishing peoples of the world. So yeah, you'll find comments like that from Kant. What's said there is true. Even under the British mandate, Palestinians included Jews. There was no distinction between the Arab Muslim population and the Jewish population in, quote, Palestine while it was the British mandate. I think that's important to bear in mind. And you're in effect correct. There's no distinct Palestinian culture. There's no distinct Palestinian nation. There's no distinct Palestinian people until someone came up with the word in the 1960s. Absolutely correct.
Certainly, I've read Hegel's comments about Africans, so it doesn't surprise me that the broader German Romantics were tremendous racists as well. But there we go.
Finding a German racist, isn't that astonishing? No, I know many Germans and I love them. I am not meaning any ethnic slur against my dear German friends.
Yeah, for sure.
John Hegel and Marx were not exactly advocates of racial equality and being fair to Jews.
Let's put it that way. Most certainly. Okay, James, I've kept you over time. Any final comments briefly?
No, I think we've depressed everyone quite well enough this morning or this evening. So, look, we need to support Israel, folks. I know it's looking grim for the Tory party in Britain. I know it's still a very, very close election, according to the polls in the United States. But Tories aren't going to save us. Trump isn't going to save us. So it's not the outcome of an election that's going to make the difference for Israel or for morality in the world, ladies and gentlemen. We have to stand up. We have to be a voice of moral clarity. And if I could be so bold, helping us here at the Ayn Rand Center is one of the best things you can do to at least get a consistent voice of moral clarity on this issue. That's the only hope I can really offer, Morgan.
For sure. And look, everyone, it's important to keep up with current events, but if following them gets you down in the dumps, you know, with the rest of your day, go do something that brings you some joy and it'll
pick you up. Exactly.
Okay, James, look, thank you so much. Thank you so much, everyone else. We'll be back tomorrow with the Daily Objective and the Rouse Show Extra, where James will be with me and Mark, and we're talking about free speech in Scotland again, because there is none. We'll be talking about that.
And I'm laughing at a grim thing. But it's not all bad news. Do tune in tomorrow. We'll talk about the changes in free speech law in Scotland.
Yeah, for sure. All right, everybody. Thanks so much. And we'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.